Appalachia, the word that evokes a whole passel of reactions. Everything from the beauty of a mountaintop to trailer parks, drugs, and about everything in between. The Appalachian Mountains are indeed the oldest mountains in the world. They once towered 30,000 feet into the air. They stretch from eastern Canada through 14 states all the way to Louisiana. The folks who live in these mountains have faced an unending number of tragic and just plain odd happenings that cry out for the telling. Hello, I'm Larry Bentley, and I was born and raised in these very mountains by a family who themselves were born, raised, and lived for generations in the heart of the Appalachian Mountains. Come with me and we'll take a look at some of the unending stories that come from within my beloved mountains. And we'll look through the eyes of an old Appalachian at some outside the area as well. Welcome to Season 4 of Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend. Howdy, my good friends. I hope you're doing well today. Sure hope you're doing as good as I am. Matter of fact, I'm finer than a frog hair split two ways. Thank you for stopping by again. I gotta say first, I got a comment from a listener saying pretty much that they used to like the podcast, but now it's mostly sick crap. Blood and sick minds. Gotta be a little off to talk about that all the time. No thanks. Well, thank you for that comment. I have been hitting the murder stories pretty hard. First off, the stories I'm finding cry out for the telling. Then there's what they call analytics. That's where you go in and look at what folks are listening to the most on your podcast. On Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend, it seems that folks far and away prefer the murder stories and the shoot-em-ups by a long shot. I took that to mean, well, y'all want more of these stories, and that led to, well, what it ended up being a little growth in the audience. Now, I have been accused of being about a half bubble off plum more than once, but I'm here to tell you that there's nothing enjoyable about the poor folks that we talk about, what they actually go through, and I get no personal joy out of telling it. The victims deserve not to be just another statistic on somebody's murder book somewhere, but folks need to know their story. That being said, I do have more stories on the burner that won't be straight-up murder stories, and I will be getting to them pretty soon. So, let's get on with our story today. You know, triangles are the standard of about what everything in engineering and construction is based on. For example, let's say an engineer is building a bridge. Long story short, he calculates the strength of that bridge based on triangles. So you could say that the triangle is the strength of about everything. And that would sure enough be true if you said that. That is, I guess, until it comes to relationships. That's when the triangle, for all the good it does, goes down the toilet like remnants of a big Thanksgiving dinner. The love triangle has caused more than a little bit of hurt in the world. This week, we're going to head on up to West Vineland, New Jersey. Now, West Vineland may not be on a mountaintop, but you know me. I incorporate nearly the whole East Coast into the Appalachian Mountains because it technically is. And I suppose probably I should do an episode one day to explain why, if I can do that without boring your socks off. But anyway, grab yourself a seat and set a spell, and let me tell you a little bit about a triangle that didn't end well for anybody. Now, on the morning of September 15th, 1927, Dr. A. William Lilienthal and his wife Margaret did what they did nearly every day. They would take long drives through the countryside of Vineland, New Jersey. They would drive as far as New York, Philadelphia, and Atlantic City, or even further on a typical day's drive. Now, the Lilienthals were an odd couple to begin with. The good doctor came from a prominent line of New York attorneys and doctors whose bloodline ran all the way back to the American Revolution. Folks, the man had a pedigree that would shame a crust dog show champion. Margaret, well, she was on the other hand. She grew up on her own protected little bubble of affluence in a money-soaked Baltimore suburb called Cantonsville, there by the Patapsco Valley State Park. Of course, this took place before it was an official state park. Back in 1927, it was what was called a forestry preserve, which meant, in short, that it was a state park. They just hadn't come up with the official term state park yet. Now, the two lovebirds met by complete chance in 1913. Margaret was living at the Tosic Apartments in Cabrini Avenue in Washington Heights when she came down with a horrible throat infection. Back then, that could very well kill you, and kill you in pretty short order, folks. Somebody got the idea to run upstairs and ask a doctor that lived up there to make a house call. And folks, yes, I'm old enough to remember the doctor making house calls on my great-grandfather. Old Dr. Divers would come by and check in on him. And, of course, I'd be there for my complimentary lollipop that he kept in his black bag. Now, I don't know if Dr. Liliendahl had a lollipop or not, but he sure was the doctor that agreed to make the house call on Margaret and that day, and then, you know, whenever mojo he did have, fixed her right up in more ways than one, because it wasn't long before they were in the middle of a full-blown romance. In fact, she became his secretary, and they were married in fairly short order, despite the 30-year age difference back then, you know, which got him a whole lot of the stink eye from the local folk. That's just the way it was then. It was her first marriage and the good doctor's second. His first wife had died a few years earlier. Now, the reason the couple would make their daily jaunts around the area every day was because Dr. Liliendahl had just been through the ringers. He'd been accused of dispensing way on too many narcotics to his patients, which pretty much wrecked his practice down pretty good and drove him nearly insane and caused him to have a heart attack. Back then, the only real treatment for heart attack was rest and relaxation to try to get that tension all worked out. Those long drives were about the only thing that he could find that relaxed him enough to you know, work for him. Now, Margaret would drive, and he would ride along and take in the countryside scenery. Man, he'd be hurting today if he was to go see the gas prices, wouldn't he? He'd drop over at the gas pumps from high blood pressure, wouldn't he? Yeah, I'd say. But that brings us back to our date of September 15th, 1927, when a New Jersey farmer driving along a road in Vinland, probably with a load of hay from his second field cutting about that time on his trailer, stopped because he saw a woman shrieking and screaming. Now, some sources say it was a milkman that found the poor woman, but most agree it was a farmer. Now, I think it would have been probably been a good idea to get the man's name, but I couldn't find it anywhere either. So he did what any good-hearted person would do. He hurried toward the commotion along a place known as Hamilton Bog. And this woman was, of course, Margaret Liliendahl, and she led him over to a car parked on the side of the road. That's where he found Dr. Liliendahl slumped over the steering wheel. He had been shot 3 times, all of them in the head, and Margaret was pretty tore down over it, and in between moaning, wailing, and great gnashing of teeth, she explained that they had been accosted by 2 black highwaymen who robbed him and shot the doctor when he decided he wasn't going to comply once they started groping all over his wife and tearing her blouse up. It wasn't long before the New Jersey State Police rolled up, and the trooper on the scene checked Dr. Liliendahl as Margaret asked if he was dead. The trooper told her yes, he was, and of course the wailing started all over again. Just then, out of curiosity, the trooper double-checked the doctor and said, "Oh, wait just a minute. I think I have a pulse." Margaret pretty much stopped and had a wait-what moment. And that was actually a ruse by the trooper to gauge her reaction to the doctor still being alive. Apparently, it was more of her "oh, shit" than it was "thank God," which raised a little red flag over her head as far as the trooper was concerned. But different folks react in different ways to things, and he took her at her word for the time being. Within about 20 minutes, a whole posse and dozens of state police officers threw up roadblocks, scoured the swamps and pine woods from Philadelphia to Atlantic City trying to ferret out the killer. Of course, as business as usual back then, random black folks were rounded up and subjected to the third degree, but prosecutors were unable to pin the murder on any of them. And folks don't think they didn't try. As all of that was happening, Mrs. Liliendahl had been taken to the hospital to recover from the whole ordeal. when she recovered enough, she wanted to return home, but she went to the state police barracks in Hamilton as a voluntary prisoner. First off, because there ain't no telling whether or not the unsub might come back, if nothing else, you know, to maybe shut Mrs. Lily a doll up the hard way. Since her first story had been a mite vague, especially the description of the two men, now that she was all right again, maybe Mrs. Lily and Doll could come up with a few more details as to who the heck did the horrible deed. Wait till you hear the rest of the story, folks. Stick around. You're listening to Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend with Larry Bentley. Folks, it wasn't long after that before the birth of Better Than News started in with the What They Heards. What they heard was that Mrs. Liliendahl was a good bit more than just hospitable with a local chicken farmer named Willis Beach, who was 57 years old and looked like Keith Richards after an all-nighter at Jack Nicholson's house, and who just happened to have mysteriously disappeared after the shooting. Of course, all of that got back to the investigators, who took it all under advisement, which meant that they would see if any of it held water. They stirred that cup of sugar into the mix, along with their other findings, which were, in the first place, these men must be just Jim Dandies of a set of robbers, because they didn't take the doctor's gold watch or chain, which were found in his vest pocket, or Mrs. Liliendahl's purse, which was found unopened in the back of the car. The hardened robbery experts also missed her wristwatch, which was picked up a few yards from the front of the car, and one of her rings, which was found slung in the bushes near the car. And in the second place, though she had struggled with the hold-up men, the police couldn't find any evidence of a struggle anywhere. By now, Mrs. Liliendahl was told that she could go home, but for some reason she stayed at the barracks. Nobody knew why she did. Meanwhile, Mr. Beach, the aforementioned man who caught the brunt of the gossip wheel, showed up. It seemed that he had heard the gossip and wanted to clear it all up. He was a married man and a father, and long past any urge for a romance. The authorities took his statement and then told him that they'd call him if they needed him for anything in the future. Wasn't long before there had developed evidence of the meetings and letters between Mrs. Liliendahl and Chicken Man Beach. Seems that the local postmistress was well aware of the letters flowing back and forth between the two. Then they found evidence that the doctor had known about and outright resented the affair between the two lovebirds. A witness had come up out of the woodwork and to say that he'd seen the doctor out in his own yard yelling about how the Chicken Man Beach better keep it in his pants or else. And folks, then they find out that evidence that Mr. Beach had been needing money and that he'd promised a car salesman who was coming to seize his car that he would have the money on the actual day or two, and which was the day before the murder of Dr. Liliendahl. Then came another witness that saw Chicken Man Beach near the scene of the crime at about the time it happened. I reckon police figured that it was about enough because they arrested both of them. Believe it or not, they were both released on bail after that. Once the trial started, which happened just 11 weeks after the crime did, because back then they didn't mess around. The defense's main effort was to try to save Mrs. Liliendahl and Chicken Man Beach from the electric chair that the state was trying to wear out, like it was trying to permanently remove every deviant under the sun from existing on planet Earth. Now, on the day that the trial started, Chicken Man Beach showed up looking even worse than he had before, because he'd had two heart attacks since being pounced on and arrested. It was a wonder that he was even alive. Now, Caroline Timberlane, postmistress of South Vineland, told everybody that Chicken Man Beach's Mrs. Liliendahl used a friend named Peggy Anderson to exchange your hot love letters instead of sending them through the regular mail. Now, nobody asked her how exactly she knew that and what the letter said or anything else, but she went on saying that the old man was on to him, and postmistress Timberland said that the Chicken Man Beach once told her, "I'm going to get that doctor if he don't quit hounding us." I reckon the Chicken Man was the one with the lollipop here, wouldn't he? But the love triangle story was in full bloom when a witness said that they saw Mr. Beach near the murder scene. And believe it or not, there was a map in the Lillian Dahl's car with a big X marked on it right where the crime took place. Looked to me like somebody set him up for an ambush. I don't know about y'all, but that's what I'm thinking. Then, of course, the defense brought up the good doctor's dealings with the narcotics, saying that it could have been some heroin head that crawled up out of the gutter long enough to squeeze the trigger off three times before flopping back out to where knows where he come from. But, you know, the phantom killer from parts unknown sounds like a wrestler from the golden age of mid-Atlantic wrestling. For me, I can hear Bob Caudle now going, "The phantom killer from parts unknown." But it's pretty much what the defense tried to say happened anyway. By the time the case went to the jury, they deliberated on first-degree murder and were deadlocked. The jury judge sent them back to try again, and after 23 more long, agonizing hours of negotiations, they convicted both defendants of voluntary manslaughter, which made the judge mad enough to bite the heads off a few 10-penny nails. He said, "Why they brought in that verdict of manslaughter, I don't know. The crime was beyond question a murder." So by the time he cracked down on the gavel, he sentenced Chicken Man Beach and Margaret Lillian Dahl to a maximum of 10 years in the state penitentiary, which was the maximum sentence. They giggled all the way to Trenton State Prison. "We won't be there long," Chicken Man Beach said to the back seat of the police car as he's riding there. What he said turned out to be true, too. 3 years into his sentence, he was lumbering around the yard when his final heart attack came calling, and it was all over by the time he hit the ground but the crying. On the other hand, once she applied for and was promptly denied a pardon, Margaret was granted a mercy parole in 1934 because of her health was failing from cancer. She died 31 years later in 1965. Yes, I said 31 years later, at 80 years old. Folks, I hope you got something out of this story. It needed telling. Folks, I don't know if either of them even realized how close they were to getting fried. And I think this is the first case of cancer of the magnitude that you get to get out of prison, taking 31 years to kill somebody. I did find it odd that the Chicken Man fell apart physically like he did, but by all accounts, he pretty much looked like walking death to start with. Now, if you like the podcast, throw us a rate and review on whatever podcatcher you're listening on. Come on over to Facebook group Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend Podcast, where we talk Appalachian or about anything else you want to bring up. I'll be back real soon with another Appalachian Murder, Mystery, or Legend, and I will see you then.